Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Ken Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to another edition of the Geek Cave Podcast Comics. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad.
So, fun fact, guys. Marvel's Man-Thing becomes DC's Swamp Thing if I don't shower for a few days. Welcome to comics. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today with free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies, designs on everything geek chic. Find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. And also, Gamefly, video games delivered. Your destination for new and used video games. Browse the collection of thousands of games for you to keep as long as you want without worrying about late fees. Then when you're done, send it back in the postage paid envelope for a new one. Or pay a lot less than those in-store prices and keep it forever. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now. Now! Using the link at geekcavepodcast.com.
.com.
Boys, how are we doing?
Pretty good. Little bit of housekeeping. I want to say welcome to anyone who might have found us from Podchaser, the IMDb of podcasts, because we're listed, boys.
Ooh. Hey, y'all. Glad we you're here. It. Hope you stay.
Yep.
What are you doing here?
Nope.
No, don't ask that. Don't ask that. Don't ask that. This is a positive thing. We're glad they're here.
Yes.
Yeah, this
okay.
is.
All right.
No, it's just, we welcome everyone to the sweetest smelling fandom in all of geek culture.
Yes. If you're new,
there you, go.
You are automatically the sweetest smelling fandom in geek culture.
Yeah, we use nanobots.
Mm-hmm. It's that 5G.
Son of a gun.
They warned you.
So, hey, Darren.
Yes?
Have you read anything good lately?
I'm a bit nervous, but...
Be gentle.
Be gentle.
Be gentle.
Be gentle.
It's Darren's first time.
Motherfucker, I told you be gentle.
Okay, so this month's first time, I'm going to start by just quoting... I'm gonna pull a Justin. I'm gonna pull two panels here, completely out of context.
Yay!
And I'm just gonna quote them, and I'm gonna ask you to tell me what the book is.
Okay.
You monkey boys want to throw down with me? A red lectroid of 350 years, stronger, faster, and smarter than you. You so far behind my power curve, snot pigs. Smell my man, smell.
Is this the John Cena comic?
God, I wish. At least then I wouldn't be able to see it. No,
is it the comic adaptation of Muppets from Space?
No. This is Buckaroo Banzai number one, Return of the Screw.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
All right, boys. So, let's strap in. Buckle in. It is going to be a one.
If you are not familiar with Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, or just Buckaroo Banzai because that's a long title, that came out in 1984. It starred RoboCop, Peter Weller, as a physicist, neurosurgeon, test pilot, rock star. And
wasn't Jeff Goldblum also in that movie?
Let me look. Yes, John Lithgow, Jeff Goldblum, Christopher Lloyd, Ellen Barkin.
Yeah.
All in the film. The film, which I have seen once, and have not seen since then, so it's been several years, which is bad news for me, because this story was written by the original creators of Buckaroo Banzai, and they're presuming that you have just watched the movie before you read this book.
Yes.
They're presuming you have just watched a 27-year-old movie before you pick up issue number one from Moonstone Publishing.
Well, who wouldn't?
Are you telling me that you don't have it on repeat just somewhere there in your Netflix queue?
Tell you, here in the Indiana cave, we do not.
So what I'm hearing from this is we need to pull the audio from the movie so he can have it on repeat everywhere.
Or there's maybe a Watch What coming where we need to invite Darren into our conversation.
Maybe.
I have seen the movie, though. That's the thing. It's just been 20, not 27 years. I would have been two. But, you know, it's one of those things where I'm not 29 years old. I know. I miscalculated
the age. He's having his seventh anniversary of it.
It's a... All right.
He's 29 with 7 years experience.
There you go.
It is a 37-year-old film. There. Because I'm going to be 39 this year. I digress. I have seen Buckaroo Banzai, but it's been so long that the first 20 pages, I had no idea what the hell was happening.
How long is this comic?
21 pages.
No, it's... Let me double check here. It is... Oh, look at that. It is 27 pages.
I was closest without going over.
Yeah. So...
win the showdown.
Essentially, someone comes to Buckaroo who's been having nightmares, and he's apparently been, you know, reliving some of the events of the first film, and he hasn't gotten over it yet. Apparently, he's depressed. And there's this woman named Ms. Mongoose who works for Dr. Lizardo, and she says that she needs protection. There's some weird shit that happens. Honestly, guys, I've read this issue four times now, and I still have no idea what happened. So, if your first time is like this, I'm sorry. Maybe try again with a better partner. I don't recommend it with Buckaroo Banzai, The Return of the Screw.
Oh, man.
If your first time was like this.
With a better partner, no less.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Woo!
Man.
Hold on. I'm uninstalling the book. There we go.
I really hope at some point he finds a number one where it's like, you know what? We're going to put this in the keep pile.
Yes, that would be nice.
Yeah, well, we're two down. There's still time, I suppose.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry your first time was not as gentle as you'd hoped, but we appreciate your sacrifice.
It's a confusing encounter in a back alley.
Who hasn't been there?
That's fair.
Just because yours was a side alley, doesn't mean you get to raise your hand on that, okay? An alley is an alley, back or not.
It's a back road, that's different.
Yes. Ah. Well, again, thank you, Darren. Chad?
Uh-huh.
Do you have any pearls of wisdom?
Well,
this is Chad's manga moment.
Guys, tentacle stuff is weird.
This has been Chad's manga moment.
someone's got to do a better job at picking these books for Chad.
Oh, I think his spouse has been picking them, and honestly, I'm okay with that.
Okay, well, I mean, you know, as long as it's someone who trusts him.
So speaking of tentacle stuff, I got a question for you all.
Okay.
I have recently purchased a very nice display case for a single graphic novel. And I say, speaking of tentacle stuff, because it's got some wavy lines around the edge.
Aha. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But it's tastefully done.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
But only one graphic novel will fit in there, and I want to put it on top of my, you know, kind of display case, my bookshelf, as the creme de la creme of my collection. And considering that my collection is 98.4% Batman, it's going to be a Batman comic, you know.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, yeah. pick one of the 5.2% that isn't.
Ha, ha, ha. So, I've picked two of my favorites. Two books that I think are absolutely really good Batman stories. And if I've missed one, feel free to chime in. But I've picked The Long Halloween and Hush. And I need to know what's going to go in the display case.
Well, Long Halloween probably has the best mystery. You know. And I mean, of those two. I mean, because Hush is more... He's not... It doesn't seem to be as... Or am I getting back? Hush is the better mystery. Long Halloween is the better story.
Ah, so, okay. I'm not looking. I'm not so much basing it on the best mystery. I'm like the premier Batman story.
Well, do you have Batman Year One?
Do what? Bears go number two in the woods?
I don't know. I've never met one.
Okay, the answer is yes. Yes, I have Year One.
Well, I mean, that would have been my, you know, I would have thrown that into the mix because it is one of the premier Batman stories.
Okay, three. I have three graphic novels to choose from.
True. Well, and before New 52, I mean, Year One was the canon origin story for Batman, right?
The new what?
Yeah. So
fair. Yeah.
So I need some help. What is, of these three, Long Halloween, Hush, Batman Year One, the creme de la creme of Batman stories to take its place of honor on top of my bookshelf? I even got, you know, little spotlights to shine on it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Well, so, personally, I really like The Long Halloween. It is probably one of my favorite Batman stories because it covers, you get a little bit of everything in there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Practically all the villains, an engaging mystery where you're not entirely sure what's going on. The art style's a little funky, but it's not bad.
Well, I like the art style in Long Halloween.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just some of Batman's ears kind of look like they could flop around in the breeze, so it's a little disjointed.
I thought that was on purpose.
Probably.
I mean, my biggest problem with Long Halloween was the Joker's gaping maw.
Yeah, true.
I mean, art is a really, for me, for comics, art is a crucial thing, and it comes down to personal choice. Kind of like Kelly Jones, just don't like his work. I understand why people do, but I don't. And unfortunately, Long Halloween kind of falls under that. I liked the story, I don't like the art.
That's fair.
When did Long Halloween come out? About? I mean, are we in 20 years now territory? Or
in the 2000s, I think.
Okay. So around about the time of, like, Dark Knight, that kind of stuff. Batman Begins, Dark Knight?
No, before that.
Yeah, before that.
Okay.
Maybe late 90s.
I would say...
Are you Googling it?
My vote would be going toward Year One. Because when you look at how Batman is presented now and how Batman has been presented for the past 30 plus years, year one really kind of set the, you know, set the direction of Batman from there on out.
Well, we know that that was what Joel Schumacher wanted to make with his Batman movie, and the studios told him, we don't want an origin story, so we got what we got with Batman Forever. Just think of what it could have been. Because Schumacher is a, you know, Joel Schumacher is a...
Joel Schumacher.
I've been doing that all weekend. Joel Schumacher
yes,
is a talented...
Yes, last night we had hard Schaco tells.
Yep. Yep.
Nice.
So I'm inclined to agree with you, Darren, on the year one, specifically because... While I really like Hush and I really like Long Halloween, and I do think Long Halloween is my favorite of the bunch to pick up and read, I don't like the endings of either of them.
That's fair. I mean, I think Hush is my favorite of the three, but when you're looking at just impact on the character as a whole, I have to lean, you know, towards year one.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause in Long Halloween... You get an extra killer out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Spoilers on a 20-year-old.
Yeah. Book. But we didn't say who.
Yeah. But you get a killer out of nowhere. There was never any indication. And I reread those parts of the book just to see if there was any indication. It's like, I don't think they actually planned that. I think they just threw it in at the end.
It's possible.
You know,
they needed two more pages.
ironically, this year is the 15th anniversary of Long Halloween. 25th anniversary of Long Halloween. Man, I can't do math today.
You can't do math and I can't talk. We're doing great. We Yay. Should not put together a budget for the Geek Cave.
It makes me scared of what I can't do today.
1996 is when it came out.
Okay, mid to late 90s. Yeah, that's
And Hush, I was so irritated with Hush because, and again, spoiler on a really long, you know, really old book. Hush finally makes the Riddler someone to be reckoned with. And then neuters them literally on the same page. And it's like, okay, you have this crazy genius madman who now knows Batman's secret. And Batman basically eliminates him from contention on that same page.
Yeah, using his own insanity against them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's Batman for you.
That is Batman. That's a very Batman way to handle it.
Yeah. And I really do like in year one the juxtaposition between Bruce in his first his momentum up to becoming Batman and his first outings as Batman and Gordon coming into Gotham for the first time and moving his way up through the ranks and kind of the journal entries and the side by side comparison. Yeah.
I appreciate that we see their mistakes and the way they correct them.
Yes.
They're neither one shown to actually be paragons of their, you know, of their individual, you know, worlds.
Yeah. No.
Because even Bruce or Batman would say that he was making mistakes,
mm-hmm.
and Gordon owns up to his mistakes.
Yes.
You know, mistakes that he shouldn't have made. Should have known better.
Well, he's only human.
He's only human. I get it.
Well, okay, he's only fictitious human.
Well, it's a lot different. You know, Bruce's mistakes are, oh, shoot, I kicked that guy too hard and I'm going to crack his ribs. It's like, okay, that comes from not being a crime fighter before. Gordon's was, I'm a cheat on my wife.
breaking ribs, breaking hearts. You know, it's all in the same.
it's all in the same torso area.
Yeah.
Yeah, that comes from, you know, not being a cheating spouse before. It's inexperience.
Oh.
The Geek Cave podcast does not recommend nor endorse,
no,
condone,
please.
Or otherwise.
Please do not. Yeah.
Some things you don't need to try out.
No. Trust us.
No good comes of it. I promise you. Have we helped or have we made it worse?
I think so. I think I'm going to lean towards... oh, wait, what's this? Ooh, sweet. Amazon just said that my comic adaptation of Batman and Robin showed up. So that's going up in the spot.
Oh. Okay.
Huh.
Curious. Didn't you once call my mother on me because I praised that movie?
That's just because I wanted to talk to your mom. I like your mom. She's a sweet lady.
Huh.
I love the continuity we have here.
What's that?
Well, the fact that that was about 50 episodes ago.
That was in 2.0. We're in 3.0 territory now.
Oh, all new, huh?
The old Geek Cave is dead to me.
Okay, so we've got a whole new 52 episodes ahead of us, right?
I'm sorry, what? You went staticky there, Chad. I couldn't quite hear you.
Actually, it would have been in probably my first year of doing this because we did all the Batmans and all the Supermans. And
oh, yeah. So that was 1.0. Yeah, I totally don't remember back that far.
Way back.
I have fleeting moments of the first couple of years of Geek Cave, and it's just stupid stuff I did to break Darren. Get to the chopper.
That was BC. That was before Chad.
Yeah, before Chad.
Oh, my gosh. Memories.
Because I remember these things in part because Darren was the one that we ended up having to do the random review for Superman 4.
Yeah.
Back when the reviews were not quite so random.
Yes. The quest for an F to give.
You know, we aren't technically bound by FCC rules.
Yeah,
the quest for a fuck to give.
There you go. Thank you.
But I thought we kind of agreed a PG-13.
We did, yes.
Well, in a PG-13, you get one.
Yeah.
And since we do three episodes in a week, we can technically say it three times.
Okay, he took the one for the comic, so I get to do one for games.
That's fine by me.
That's fair. That's fair.
Oh.
Which is really going to be hard for him because he's got a POS review coming.
Yeah, so I just got to get it in early.
But I'm good. I mean, I guess if you want to put, you know, the comics version of George Clooney and Chris O'Donnell with Uma Thurman and Arnold Schwarzenegger on your wall.
Two words.
Yeah.
Bat nipples.
Good night, everybody.
Oh, no. Not yet. Kent?
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Prepare yourself for Justin's long box. Yeah, baby. Extra long.
So, hey, Chad.
Yeah.
I tried really hard this time because I know some of my long boxes just perplex you and you tend to walk away with a headache.
I do end up more perplexed than not.
So, I tried really hard this time. I really did. I took you into consideration.
I appreciate that.
And I've gone back and replayed a lot of our past conversations and whatever, and I think I found one that you're really going to enjoy.
I'm excited and hopeful.
Today we're talking about Howard the Duck.
Okay. I rescind my hopefulness. You will now be known as Justin Dream Smasher, the killer of hopes.
How do you know what I'm called in the bedroom?
I was about to say, that's kind of a badass D&D name.
It is.
Yeah.
Depends on the context.
Thing is that, you know, back in college, Justin was known as the considerate fuck machine. See, that's how you break a Darren.
That's how you break a
Darren. You want to break a Darren. He moved the camera.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we're on a Zoom call, and Darren's camera just shifted. Only if they're into it. Otherwise,
yeah,
whatever.
You know.
So anyway, Howard the Duck. You thought you were going to get out of this one.
No, I'm... I derailed just long enough to regain a sense of center.
Ah. So Howard the Duck was created by Steve Gerber and Val Merrick.
So that's who we have to blame.
Yeah. And first appeared in Adventure into Fear, number 19, December 1973. So Howard is a resident of Duck World.
Right.
He is abruptly abducted from his home by an unseen force, and randomly dropped into the Florida Everglades by the demon lord Throg the Netherspawn. He meets Man-Thing, who has been attacked by Korik of Karaktha. And the three of them are confronted by warriors of the Congress of Realities.
Okay. So the warriors from Cleveland.
Yes. he meets Dakame, the enchanter, and banishes them to his castle, where they are joined by Jennifer Kale. That is such a weird name.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds odd.
Sounds made up. So, you know. They then travel to the realm of Thera and destroy Thog, the Neverspawn. Howard then accidentally falls off the interdimensional stepping stones that the group has been traveling on and materializes in Cleveland, Ohio, where he battles Garko the Man-Frog. Howard is arrested at this time for being mistaken for a mutant during a strip search, because, you know, duck, and is released because the police fear what mutant abilities he may have. He also encounters a vampiric cow named Bessie the Hellcow.
Okay.
I want to know that story. Tell me more about vampiric Bessie.
I don't have time. Howard makes friends with a model named Beverly Schweitzer, and a bizarre series of encounters follow.
Well, that's par for this course.
He battles Pro Rata, the cosmic accountant, then meets Spider-Man at the end of the battle. He battles Turnip Man and the Kidney Lady, and learns the ancient martial art of Quack Fu.
Is Turnip Lady and...
Turnip Man and Kidney Lady.
Turnip Man and Kidney...
They're not together.
Tell me that that's
two separate ones. Yeah, it's not a dynamic duo situation. It's okay. Turnip Man.
Okay. And Kidney Lady.
And Kidney Lady, yeah. It's not a pairing.
Thank Christ.
Howard then encounters the Winky Man, who is actually a sleeping alter ego of Beverly's art friend, Paul. Howard also briefly becomes a wrestler. So, Darren, that should have you interested.
Sure.
Howard and Beverly hit the road seeking shelter in a gothic mansion where they battle a girl named Patsy and her giant animated-to-life gingerbread man. Eventually, the duo end up in New York, where Howard is nominated for president of the United States by the All Night Party. He then later battles the Band of the Bland alongside the Defenders.
He's not a natural-born citizen. How could he run for president?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm reading here, okay? Don't bring logic into this. A doctored photo scandal leads him to Canada, where he defeats the supervillain, the Beaver, who caused the scandal. Howard then suffers a nervous breakdown and flees Beverly and their situation on a bus. Unfortunately, the bus's passengers are all believers of various weird cults and tried to interest Howard in them. His seatmate, Winda Wester, and... You know, they're going through the trip. And after the bus crashes, Howard and Winda are sent to a mental institution. As you do.
That's what you do with a crash victim. Yeah.
There he meets Damien Hellstrom and is briefly possessed by Hellstrom's demonic soul, becoming the new son of Satan. Beverly and Paul manage to get them back to Cleveland. Later, while on the SS Damned, a cruise ship returning from scenic Bagmom, Howard and Beverly are taken captive by Lester Verde, who was Beverly's had a crush on Beverly in college and has now assumed the identity of Dr. Bong. Remember him?
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I hadn't.
Marries Beverly against her will and transforms Howard into a human.
And happy endings all abound.
No. After escaping back to New York and being restored to his natural form, he's hired as a dishwasher by Beverly's uncle. He later is reunited with Dokkum and the Enchanter and Man-Thing and Korik and Jennifer Kale, and they do battle with the demon Bzzjon. B-Z-Z-K apostrophe J-O-H.
Of course.
Yes. Korik pilots the ship, the Epoch Weasel, and drops Howard back in Cleveland before he and his allies fly away. Howard finally makes it back to the cruise ship and rescues Paul and Winda from Dr. Bong. Howard dons a suit of the Iron Duck armor made by Claus Starkwitz A man who has delusions of being related to Tony Stark and dreams of being the personal armorer of Iron Man. And battles Dr. Bong in the final issue of the original 70s run of Howard the Duck. He also later encounters Dracula and is...
Oh, Dracula sounds interesting. Tell me about him.
And even once returns to Duck World. At the end of the 9-issue magazine miniseries, Howard leaves Beverly and is later offered a genetically constructed female duck mate whom he does not take. He doesn't take to her.
Everyone lives happily ever after.
During Heroes Reborn, Howard gets a job as a department store Santa Claus, which gets him dragged to the North Pole where the real Santa has sold out to Hydra. Howard goes through several dimensions and lands in a version of Duck World where his parents are essentially Ward and June Cleaver. He eventually finds himself back in Man-Thing Swamp. Howard goes off on his own, but is captured by the Cult of Entropy, who wrap him in swaddling clothing. Although last seen in the swamp, Howard states that he was thrown into baggage and transported on a plane. The cult wants Howard because he has a part of the Nexus of All Realities, which shattered during Heroes Reborn, inside of him. Man-Thing then enters Howard's mouth, and Howard vomits him back up with the fragment.
Of course he does.
During Civil War, Howard attempts to register... Yes. Howard attempts to register under the Superhero Registration Act during the Superhero Civil War, but learns his societal... learns he is socially... His socially disrupted life has created so many bureaucratic headaches that the government officially the government's official policy is that Howard does not exist.
Even your body is telling you to stop.
The lack of government oversight delights him for the end quote, for the rest of my life, no more parking tickets or taxes or jury duty. Heck, I don't even have to vote if I wanted to. He is a free agent in the world, for he, quote, does not exist. After he defeats the supervillain MODOT,
God-tier superpower right there.
After he defeats the supervillain MODOT, and not MODOK, MODOT, mobile organism designed only for talking, whose scheme was to control the public through mass media, his attorney, Jennifer Walters, She-Hulk, successfully restores his citizenship, including all relevant responsibilities. So, you know, now he has to vote. So back in New York, Howard returns to his business as a private eye, working in the same building as She-Hulk. You okay there, Darren?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
At least he's checking on you. I'm sitting over here bleeding from the ears.
I just assumed that was natural.
Oh, it's natural. It's natural blood.
Yeah, it happens every time I do a long box. One of his first clients is Jonathan Richards, who hires Howard to receive a necklace stolen by the Black Cat. With the help of Tara Tam, his new friend and assistant, Howard manages to recover the necklace. However, on his way to give it back to Richards, he finds himself kidnapped by the Collector and allies with the Guardians of the Galaxy to escape. The Collector tried to add Howard to his collection of rare space objects. Upon returning to Earth, Howard is robbed by May Parker, Spider-Man's aunt, because, yeah, she's badass. After recovering the necklace for a third time, Howard is approached by Richards in the middle of a fight against the Ringmaster, and Richards reveals himself to be Talos the Untamed, who reveals that the necklace was part of a marginally powerful item known as the Abundant Glove. With the help of Doctor Strange, Howard and Tamra locate the final piece of the Abundant Glove and are able to put it back together when Talos grabbed it and proceed to use it to wreak havoc on the city. Talos is confronted by numerous heroes while Howard and Tara take cover. He's able to point out that Tara, who is revealed to be a shapeshifter with similar powers to the Skrull, can help them defeat Talos. They do, and all is returned to normal.
Thank goodness. And everyone lives happily ever after.
Well, yeah, that's the end of my narrative for Howard the Duck. During the Amalgam Comics...
And the birds were singing. There was light.
I didn't say I was done. That's just my history of Howard. During the Amalgam Comics. Darren, you remember that when DC and Marvel kind of fused into one briefly?
Yeah, yeah. You had Spider-Man and Superboy merged, and was it Jubilee and Robin and Wolverine and Batman, that kind of thing?
Yeah, Howard and Lobo fused to become Lobo the Duck.
Fair. Yeah.
And then let's not forget the wonderful film adaptation, which made me think of you, Chad, the 1986 film by the same name.
Let's not forget.
Howard also makes a brief appearance at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy, voiced by Seth Green. And this should interest you, Chad. In a 2018 interview, Leah Thompson, who starred in the original Howard the Duck movie, said that she was going to pitch to Marvel a new Howard the Duck movie with the hopes of directing it.
Ooh.
Uh-huh.
Also, between June of 77 and October of 78, Howard the Duck appeared in a syndicated daily comic strip. A total of 11 story arcs, as well as single strip jokes, constituted the 511 individual strips that were printed.
That's...
In the 80s, there was a pilot radio show version of Howard the Duck recorded, and Jim Belushi played Howard. It was never released, but man, that would be fun.
Wow.
I'll admit that does sound up Jim Belushi's alley.
Yeah. And one final little note concerning Howard the Duck. In 1977, Walt Disney Company contacted Marvel over concerns that the visual design of Howard infringed on their trademark for Donald Duck.
Okay.
Marvel agreed to redesign the character, and a key feature of the redesign was to give Howard pants. So there's everything you never wanted to know about Howard the Duck.
I will agree with that statement for sure.
I want to thank our sponsor, Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today, and Gamefly, video games delivered. Please take a moment to leave us a review on your podcast service of choice. We would really appreciate it. Also, drop us a line on Facebook and Twitter or Instagram. We would absolutely love to hear from you.
Yeah.
Don't forget to listen to our other segments, the gaming and movie segments, coming up later this week, as well as our other shows, You Want Me to Watch What?, TLDR, and on YouTube, Retromantics and Geek Cave Plays. And now, here is your out-of-context comic panel. We see Batman. Catwoman is behind him in an apartment, and he's getting ready to jump off the balcony. His grappling hook is deployed. And as he's ready to swing into action, he says, "I promise." And this is one sentence, by the way. "I promise, no matter what, I will never be your friend, and I will never forgive you, and I will hate you for the rest of my life." For Kent, Darren, and Chad, I'm Justin, and this has been the Wonderful World of Comics. And remember, everyone's a geek for something.